For the Pacifica Radio Network and from the studios of KBOO in Portland, Oregon, this is Progressive Spirit. ProgressiveSpirit.net. I'm John Schuck.
The power for me of the walking experience of putting on my shoes and lacing them up and walking also helped me become a metaphor by which I could understand the coming out process. For those of us who are gay or lesbian, bisexual, trans, queer, questioning, or intersex in the LGBTQI community, there is the useful metaphor of a closet. But for me, the next step was not only the closet, got that, I felt that, but I needed a metaphor, I needed a way to talk about coming out. And for me, that was a pilgrimage.
In the studio is Brett Webb Mitchell. Brett is a colleague in ministry. He is interim minister at St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church in Southwest Portland. He's a scholar, teacher, and author of 10 books. He's also a pilgrim, and that's the discussion today. His latest book is Practicing Pilgrimage on Being and Becoming God's Pilgrim People. Brett, welcome to Progressive Spirit.
Good morning.
Well, talk about pilgrimage. How did you get involved in deciding to become a pilgrim?
Right. In the first few books I wrote on people with disabilities, one of the first few essays, I pulled on the image of people with disabilities, especially children with disabilities that I was working with, primarily children with autistic-like behaviors that fell across that spectrum as being located or isolated in the public or town square and of a medieval village. And they were kind of pilgrims without a church, pilgrims without an inn, pilgrims without a family, pilgrims without any kind of services providing them any kind of anchor. And so I used that metaphor. It seemed to work. I had read Canterbury Tales. I had seen and read many travel essays. Came from a family that loved to travel, and that image seemed to work in my understanding of working with people with disabilities and trying to explain why they were not welcomed into the life of faith communities, per se. And I had two Catholic friends, one who was the former secretary to Thomas Keating, who wrote about centering prayer, and another, and his name was Paul, and Megan McKenna, who was a New Testament theologian. And they said, you know, you really write pretty things about pilgrimage. Too bad you've never been on one. And they got me. I think at the time I was teaching at Duke Divinity School, and one of the things that happens at a divinity school or a school of higher education is that people like to sit in library carrels or at their office and read about these things and pontificate them from a deep knowledge of these things, but never have experienced these things. So I was guilty as charged. And so they arranged that I go on my first pilgrimage in 1999, which was to Chimayo, northern New Mexico. It's a very holy site in which much healing comes. It's kind of the Lords of the Americas, if you will. And the Archdiocese of Santa Fe, Roman Catholic, has a pilgrimage every Pentecost for the last 40 years that starts from five different sites around Chimayo and with groups of 30 people per group from various destinations around Chimayo. They walk 120 miles in 6 days to Chimayo. And I was the only Presbyterian. I was the only gringo, and I was transformed. It was one of those experiences that kind of upset my apple cart. It changed how I understood discipleship, education, and the life of the church. It broadened my understanding of faith. It broadened my understanding of not only of the Catholic traditions, but also of native spirituality, because a lot of the people who were on the pilgrimage with me were from Taos Pueblo. So it was both this kind of strain of Native American spirituality as well as deep and kind of mysterious northern New Mexico spirituality that had this influence upon me in walking 120 miles in 6 days, which, you know, you're averaging around 18, 19, 20 miles a day. It's so out of my realm as a Presbyterian, as a Protestant, in terms of understanding education and church and all, that I was hooked. It was different than a hike. It was different than a vacation. It was different than a journey anywhere, than a historical journey that I had grown up with. And so that was the first one that kind of set my life towards understanding myself, not only literally, but also metaphorically as a pilgrim. And so
Well, talk about that for a second. You said it's different from a hike, different from a journey. And one of my questions was, how is it different from being a tourist?
Sure.
What's the difference?
Well, one of the fun things is the word travel comes from the medieval Latin word travail. There are many travels I've been on that felt more like a travail than that felt like a travel. I think in the last few years, it has something to do with mindfulness. It has something to do with a sense of self-consciousness. It has something to do with self-awareness. That what makes it a journey, a pilgrimage versus a vacation or something to travel to a historical site is the intent of the pilgrim, him or herself, so that I can go, if I want to go on vacation, my partner and I simply pack up, grab a cheap flight from Portland to Kona, and within a few hours after I arrive, I'm on the beach. I'm reading a book. I'm not on a pilgrimage. I'm literally vacating. I'm emptying myself. I don't understand that as a spiritual journey. Now, if I wanted to, I could say I wanted to go to fly then over to Molokai and visit the sites of Father Damien and Mother Marianne. And thus, by going there and saying, I want to see where these people did this spiritual work. I want to see where they did this physical labor in working with people with leprosy. And I've done this hike. I've walked down to the colony. And that I did that intentionally as a pilgrimage. I broke my vacation time last year and went on a pilgrimage because now I was of the mindset I wanted to see holy work. I wanted to see a holy place. And I wanted to see where these people lived and died. And so that was the difference, was my mindset had changed. So in essence, what always makes a place holy is always the people. It's not the thing itself. It's always the people who go there. There's a very famous line in the pilgrimage. If you go to Escapulas, Guatemala, in which there's a beautiful cathedral, 400 years old, with a 500-year-old statue, El Cristo Negro, the Black Christ. It's a beautifully dark-skinned Christ. And it is said there that the figure itself is not holy. They say, the Christ you seek, in other words, the Christ you seek here, the Christ you seek you will not find unless you bring him with you. And so I think that it goes back to this mind and the attitude and the direction of the person who's going on this trek, on this journey, that makes it a pilgrimage. The Christ you seek, you will not find unless you bring him with you. In other words, you've already got that Christ within you, and you're just simply bringing it to a symbol that's emotionally charged that helps you somewhere in your faith journey. So it's not the thing itself, but it is the people who gather time and time again. You come from the East as well as in the Southeast with Tennessee roots in part of your journey. You and I probably have been to churches or know of churches that have homecomings in the South.
Right.
And homecomings are basically the same thing. People come after not maybe having spent years in these churches, small and large alike, they come back. There's a sense of, and they go back, where do they go? They go to the cemetery to visit the kith and kindred who have died and passed on. They go into the place where their families used to sit in the pew that they used to sit near the certain stained glass windows. They come to taste food that they used to eat. Maybe they've moved to New York City or they've moved to Miami. Now they come back to partake in a feast that reminds them of who and whose they are. So I think it's kind of always been interesting to see all of those places that pilgrimage really exists, though we haven't necessarily called it a pilgrimage, but I think there are plenty of examples of that.
Brett Webb Mitchell is my guest. If you're just joining us on Progressive Spirit, he's the author of Practicing Pilgrimage, On Being and Becoming God's Pilgrim People. In the book, you talk about the pilgrimage is a journey, but it also needs a destination.
Mm-hmm. And it needs a genesis. It needs a reason for leaving. So it's kind of, why are you at point A and why are you going to point Z or Z? So it needs both and. It's kind of a bookmark. So people leave for a variety of reasons. Some leave because of a crisis in their family. Some leave because of crisis in their vocational life. Some leave because, you know, in the case of Pilgrim's Progress and Bunyan, He talks about the place that he's living. He leaves family because the place is burning. Now, he himself at the time is writing this epic poem, this epic story from a prison cell. So it's actually prison literature. But nonetheless, the story of Pilgrim's Progress is the guy's leaving because the place is afire and he's off to find hope. In other words, the gates of heaven. And so it's always the reason for leaving itself. It could be crisis, but it also could be literally and metaphorically one has hit one's crossroad of life. And so you're kind of trying to figure out which way do I want to go. And what we say to people at the flip of a hand, if we sense that they're in a crisis or in a conflict, even a daily one, we'll say something silly like, oh, go out and take a walk. Go out and walk and clear your mind, whatever the problem is. As you know, in one of the chapters of the book, there's a whole section on the science of walking and the importance of walking, or how walking, Wendell Berry, the folk philosopher and writer and novelist, has written something that basically says it well. We think as fast as we walk. We process as fast as we walk. So it makes sense to tell a person if they're having a problem, go out and take a walk, take a hike, take a break. So there's the genesis of the journey. The destination, I always quibble with myself after I do a pilgrimage, whether the journey's the thing or the destination's the thing. I haven't solved that conundrum yet. I think that there's both the sweetness of the journey itself and the arduousness of the journey, but I think there's also a sense of satisfaction of having gotten to the place. But I don't think, and this is my sense, especially when I've talked to people who've gone to Santiago de Compostela in Spain, that when they get to the cathedral, there is a sense of the pilgrimage is ended, but it goes on, because whatever was unraveled from point A to point Z continues to be unraveled, because you can't stop this unraveling that began throughout the journey itself. And so while you've hit a kind of physical destination, there's something of the sense now that you're always going to be on this journey, because the reason you went on was to kind of come to either at peace with the dilemma, or solved the dilemma, or resolved it in some way so that you can get on with life. But now life itself has this aura, this kind of, as I said, metaphorical sense of journey. And that's why with this book, it was a matter of talking not only about an actual intentional pilgrimage, but how that actual intentional pilgrimage awakens within us the sense that we are on a pilgrim journey, both metaphorically as well as literally in our daily life.
You know, I'm thinking of the famous pilgrimage that comes to mind to me is recounted in the autobiography of Malcolm X,
yes,
where he goes on the Hajj, a pilgrimage to Mecca, mm-hmm. and discovers a more expansive and inclusive experience of Islam.
Right.
And so pilgrimage is embedded in a number of religious traditions and secular too, isn't it?
Well, I think that's what where this book pushes me, or where I push others who read my books on pilgrimage. This is my third book. The first book was Follow Me, and that was simply narratives, because I was just experiencing for a concentrated period of time. I was going on 5 or 6 pilgrimages in 2 or 3 years' time, and so I kept on writing about these journeys in a personal essay form. Then the second book, School of the Pilgrim, was putting this, because I was still attached or tethered to the academy. It was to look at the intellectual, theological, sociological, psychological roots. So the third, I had taught a course at North Carolina Central University in HBCU in Durham, and I was reading more and more of world religions. And one of the things about the 5 major world religions, give or take the Sikhs and the Jainists and things like this, and more native spirituality, was that everyone has the language in Buddhism, Hinduism, in Islam, in Judaism, in Christianity, has the language of journey, has the language of steps, has the language of followers, has that language that is all about movement. And so in this book, I mapped out how these other faiths, how we have this one thing in common, those of us who are Christian or Muslim or Jew, Buddhist or Hindu, we have this thing in common of being pilgrims, of being journeyers.
Right.
So when I've now I now have branched off in the last 2 years. I've spent a lot more time in India and Nepal following and going on pilgrimage with people who are Buddhists or Hindu or Sikhs or Jainists, because I'm fascinated by how alike and different our traditions are. And I think that it's been mind expanding, heart expanding. So to go like with Malcolm X, it has kind of taken me out of my parochialism into a world that I'm enjoying this conversation. I'm enjoying the sharing, and kind of what I've always considered, especially in this day and age, is how fun it would be to do a pilgrimage of peace, if you will, where getting a group of people from various faith traditions to go on a pilgrimage to Santiago, go on a pilgrimage to Varanasi and Mother Ganga, or the Bagmati River in Nepal, these places that are holy, and see what we can share, see what we have that's different from each other, but see what's beautiful about what we can share together with each other, as well as Jerusalem, which is, as you know, a place that Jew and Christian and Muslim alike meet and have property.
And that's, I kind of was thinking about that, trips to what we call the Holy Land. I went on one, probably 23, 24 years ago, and it's, there's an odd feeling about it. You know, you're kind of on this bus with people.
Right, I'm not
really sure. I get, and someone was saying, yeah, this is a pilgrimage. And I'm thinking,
No, I don't know. No. Well, except that the person is intent on finding these places, come by either foot or by bus. When I've gone to and it's interesting that we call it the Holy Land, so it shows a kind of, if you will, bias, cultural bias, religious bias, that we will call it, we hear it called the Holy Land and acknowledge that it must be somewhere in the Middle East. But, you know, if one goes to India, one can't help but hit a shrine every other few feet.
Sure.
I mean, it is a land. To me, India is a land saturated with pilgrimage sites. When I go to go on pilgrimage in India, I have worked with a group, Excellent India Ventures. That's my plug for the day. And it's two brothers in a very small little village of Canberra, but they know me well now. And so what they do is, at the beginning of a day, they would simply take off, put me in front of one shrine, push me out of the car, and say, we'll see you in another 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 hours. Go see your shrines. And they leave me alone to walk in Jaipur, Udaipur, Mumbai, wherever I need to go. Because, you know, you meet people who's in the case of Hinduism, whose god may be Ganesha or Saraswati, and they, you know, they want to take you to their shrine, their home shrine, their personal shrine. And it's just fascinating, because there's no end of shrines in either Nepal or India. I mean, both are places of residence of both, and Lhasa, of Buddhism and Hinduism. So.
Now, let's talk kind of personally and spiritually about this. You write about becoming God's pilgrim people. Mm-hmm. So what is it about the pilgrimage or the journeying that connects us to what is holy? Is it kind of an awakening to the impermanence of life?
Yeah. I think, again, for the Muslim, Jew, and Christian, for us, our roots go back to Abraham and Sarah. And I think what's interesting is, in all the literature, they are always pointed to, this couple are pointed to as the first pilgrims, as the first ones that God calls them to a new land. And so they follow God. They are the ones who are the chief doubters. I doubt that she's ever going to have a baby. I doubt that we're ever going to get anywhere. I doubt that there's anything that good's going to come out of this relationship. They are the chief doubters, in which God keeps on showing them time and time again, now follow me and this will happen. Follow me, do this and this will happen. And so they become, for us, the paradigm, the prototype of a pilgrim life, because following that, you have Moses, following that. And for me, I think where it helped me in my faith was understanding Jesus as one of the late brothers from the Taizé community called Jesus the Pilgrim God. For me, especially as a gay man, what kept me in the faith when there was everything within our denomination in the Presbyterian Church, let alone other denominations, especially United Methodists and the like, who are still not at the party yet, what kept me in was not the politics of our church. It was the relationship with Brother Jesus or the Pilgrim God. I could relate and felt in my coming out, and this was crucial. 1999 wasn't only my first pilgrimage, but it was also the year that I was coming out of the closet. Mm. And so it became the power for me of the walking experience of putting on my shoes and lacing them up and walking also helped me become a metaphor by which I could understand the coming out process. For those of us who are gay or lesbian, bisexual, trans, queer, questioning, or intersex in the LGBTQI community, there is the useful metaphor of a closet. But for me, the next step was not only the closet, got that, I felt that, but I needed a metaphor, I needed a way to talk about coming out. And for me, that was a pilgrimage, that Brother Jesus gave me the tools, gave me the way, showed me the way of living honestly. And I even said this to the church this last week in a sermon. The sermon's title was Authenticity. Because Jesus in the Gospel of Matthew is talking about, you have heard that it was said, but I say to you. And one of the first ones is, you know, not only not murder, but don't say anything false about your sister or brother. Well, as a gay man, I had a lot of people talking about me. So I think that it was always helpful for me to understand that my coming out process was a pilgrimage in which Brother Jesus was walking with me. Even though the church wasn't necessarily in terms of the institution, I had enough brothers and sisters who were walking with me that I could understand that. So for me personally, it's always been a most helpful practice, but also metaphor that I could that I could explain what was going on within my life. But also, I have found other LGBTQI people who understand that it's a helpful metaphor for them as well.
As you mentioned, because we're talking also about pilgrimages, social justice. You have a chapter on a pilgrimage of justice and peace. You mentioned the civil rights movement. It seems like every week in Portland, we have a march for justice in some sense of another, Black Lives Matter or the Women's March,
right, right,
or
right.
A march for housing justice, I know is coming up. So what makes a political march a pilgrimage? And is there a time when a march might not be a pilgrimage?
Mm-hmm. I think, again, it goes back to the understanding of the mind of the and the awareness and social consciousness of the one who's on the journey. So in looking at, for example, Selma to Montgomery and all, that was a spiritual march. The way that King and Abernathy and the like understood themselves, I mean, Rosa Parks and all these wonderful figures of American history now, they understood that their march of justice was a justice that was declared by God. And so they bracketed in such language. For me, most recently, as you know, coming from North Carolina, I was a early participant in what has since become known as the Moral Monday marches. Right. Reverend Barber was at Duke when I was teaching at Duke. So I knew him as a student at Duke. Reverend Barber has bracketed everything that he's done with the Moral Monday movement in North Carolina and beyond in the language of social justice, but of God's justice. Therefore, if you were to ask him, if you were to ask Reverend Barber, are you a Democrat, are you a Republican, or are you independent? He would say, this is not about politics. He said, I would have been strongly cursing the Democrats if they were practicing injustice as I would a Republican. So I think that's even with St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church, what I've tried to help us do is consider in what ways, given the political day and age in which we live, what we do as a community of faith is based upon gospel justice, so that it is free of politics in terms of the body politics or the state politics, but is founded solely upon the politics of the kingdom of God. To use that language, I think the late John Howard Yoder talked about that kind of thing. Martin Luther King Jr. talks about that. Reverend Barber does. So these marches, what we're doing is we're participating in an act of God's justice that goes beyond the politics of this day and age. The way we're reacting today, I believe Jesus would have reacted to Caesar and Tiberius. And so there's really, I mean, this is nothing new to us as people of faith. This is what we do. We walk for matters of justice, housing, equity. We're against misogyny. We're against anything that has to do with discrediting anyone of race or religion. I mean, again, this is the way of Jesus. Anyone, regardless of gender or sexual orientation, identification, we walk for justice. That's what we do.
We just have a couple of minutes left. Brett Webb Mitchell, my guest, Practicing Pilgrimage is his book on being and becoming God's pilgrim people. You have a website called School of the Pilgrim.
I do.
How do people enroll?
Well, what they do is go on there, and what it offers is ways of, for example, if you will, hiring me out. Because what I want to start doing is offering, for example, say at Southminster or St. Andrews. I did this last weekend, in fact, with First Presbyterian Church Corvallis, taking people on retreats, taking them on a 2 or 3 day retreat and helping people learn about the pilgrimage. And so what I think I'm becoming, John, is I'm becoming an evangelist for pilgrimage. And so I want people to understand, and there is, because of the plethora of labyrinths that are around the area, interdenominationally as well as interreligious, I kind of want to beckon people to take the next step, if you will, both metaphorically as well as literally, and go on a pilgrimage. Because I think that, again, the labyrinths were created for those who could not go to Jerusalem, for example, or to Rome or Santiago de Compostela. So what I'm wanting to do with School of the Pilgrim is offer my services to help people go on a journey. So by creating opportunities in the Portland area or taking a group of people to Santiago, I'm taking a group of United Methodist ministers in May. I've invited a group of friends, for example, to go with me to Machu Picchu in October. So constantly inviting people to go along with me, as well as myself going on intentional pilgrimages by myself once a year so that I can keep on every year remembering who and whose I am.
Practicing Pilgrimage, on being and becoming God's pilgrim people. Brett Webb Mitchell has been my guest. That's his book. And your website for your School of the Pilgrim?
www.schoolofthepilgrim.com.
Brett, thanks so much for being with me.
I appreciate it, John.
You've been listening to Progressive Spirit, Spirituality, Social Justice, on public and community radio stations and via podcast at progressivespirit.net. From KBOO in Portland, Oregon, I'm John Schott. Be well.